on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday, May 20th edition of InvestTalk. This is our hour-long conference call about your invested dollars. And we certainly try to promote your whole financial well-being, not just your invested dollars. The better you manage your personal finances, budgeting, insurance, education, the better you can afford investment opportunities. Okay, so we appreciate your interest, and we're pleased that you take this time to listen to the show. We really are. In a MarketWatch article called What Investors Should Worry About, the writer talked about how certain investors, in trying to anticipate the next market crash, will try to time the market. How many times have I said, do not try to time the market? It's impossible. Now, that is get in and out at times that you feel are the beneficial to you. Can you do that? It's a terrible idea. For most people, it's just a terrible idea. But the article goes on to say that playing some defense is a good idea. And I mentioned that too. We are kind of defensive in our stocks right now. We're still fully invested, but we're a bit defensive. So the writer cited Benjamin Graham, who suggested a good strategy is to gradually move assets from more risky stocks to less risky quality bonds. Today, you'd want short-term bonds, okay? Not long-term bonds, but and quality bonds, not junk bonds. We're going to talk about that in InvestTalk 101 today. Not junk bonds, and we're going to talk about why. So, you know, that sounds like a type of timing the market, doesn't it? Well, it is as simple of rebalancing. It really is called rebalancing. You're balancing away from something that's high risk to something that's low risk. You don't do it all at once, and it's a gradual thing. So Warren Buffett does it. He's a student of Ben Graham who suggested this, and he's done pretty well, hasn't he, with this approach. The idea is to be tactical, be a tactical investor. Take a measured approach, not moving too quickly. This means gradually taking profits on riskier assets, those that you know are riskier, and then reinvest those in something that's much less risky. Just it's prudent. When the market is not acting well, it's prudent. I'll fall back on a famous quote by Bernard Baruch. He said, I made my money by selling too soon. Don't sell too late, okay? Can we help you add some perspective to your investing experience? We're open. Anytime, any money question, our number is 888-99-CHART. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, but still you can call anytime you want. And we can, if you call during the show, we can have a conversation, but I still answer questions no matter when you ask them. Now it's time to start the Q&A. Let's take this first question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, I'm a podcast listener from New York, and I listen to your excellent show every day. I have read and heard that the aversion to nuclear power plants, both in China and Japan, may be lessening, and that making an investment in a uranium ETF like URA or a company like Cameco, which is CCJ, might be timely. I respect your common sense approach to investing. Do you think this is a common sense investment at this time, or we should wait until things get a little clearer? Thanks. Bye.
It's hard for me to believe that Japan and parts of Europe will abandon nuclear power because they make up a great amount of their energy needs. And as oil and natural gas, those kind of prices increase, nuclear power looks better and better and better. Now, there are a lot of problems with nuclear power, but some of these nuclear power plants are so old, they need to be shut down. And new nuclear power plants can be made much safer. And to be honest, you know, when's the last time you heard of a nuclear power plant having a problem other than in the tidal wave that hit Japan? I mean, on its own. It's rare these days, even from really old nuclear power plants that are out there, especially in the United States. So the question is it a good time to invest in nuclear power plants? And I think what you want to do is stick with the engineering, the big companies, the big engineering companies, big companies like GE that supplies different, but are diverse enough where it's just not tied to nuclear power. I don't think it's a good idea to tie yourself to strictly nuclear power plants. I don't. But a broader sense of energy production, not oil drilling or anything like that. I'm talking more about the big turbines needed, things that like GE and Siemens make in Germany. Those kind of big time equipment, I think might be interesting. But I don't think I'd, you mentioned a company called with a symbol URL, and URL is URA, I'm sorry, URA. URA is Global X Uranium. So if you're talking about uranium mining companies, I'm not keen on it. All commodity companies have been beaten up. I'm keen on some of the commodities, but not necessarily uranium. Insurance companies have managed to build a better mousetrap to profit from retired accounts, from them profiting from retirement accounts. Is it a 401k ripoff? We'll talk about that. That's going to be our main talking point today. Downsizing in retirement. Should it be a part of the retirement plan? And what should we think about when we do that? The link between spending and income. If your income goes up, did your spending go up? If your income goes down, do your spending go down? There was a survey done, and that is very interesting findings. Also, did you see the China solar stocks implode? I want to talk about the ETFs that are in solar stocks. You need to be more careful with what's in your ETFs. And if we can get to it, where have all the shoppers gone? We're going to talk about that yesterday, and we didn't get a chance to. So those are things I'm going to discuss, hopefully, before the end of the show. But, of course, it's your show. You direct where we go. I don't have to get to any of these points. Depends on what you want to talk about. The market was down to mixed and down today. The Dow was down 27. The S&P up 2. And I'm sorry, the NASDAQ up 2 and the S&P down 2. NASDAQ down 20, the Dow down 27, the NASDAQ up 2 and the S&P down 2. The market was up about before the last hour or so, not up big. It was kind of a chattery market. But the minutes of the Fed came out, and the market kind of sold off. I felt that there would be good news because the Fed kind of indicated they're not raising interest rates in June. Now, of course, didn't we all kind of know that from the bad GDP number from the first quarter, and the numbers coming in April? Only so far, the only good one, the really good one, was housing starts. So what's the incentive for them to raise the rates? Our economy's not that strong. Their incentive would be jobs. We have a good job market. And there are people who argue that the Fed should have raised their rates a long time ago. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that, by the way, because the rates are far lower than they would normally be with unemployment in the 5% area. But the real question, and I think the Fed is answering it for us, is the job market that strong? I think they're saying, no, it's not. It's not. It might be 5% unemployment rate, but the job market is not that strong. See, and I think that's what the Fed is telling us, and I think that's what the economy is telling us with the first quarter GDP numbers. It's not, it's not that hard to figure out that, there's no really reason. And if the Fed started to raise rates, what do you think that'd do to the dollar? It'd make the dollar spike up, wouldn't it? If they started to raise rates? If that's the case, why did the dollar spike up yesterday? And why did it stay up and even went a little higher today? Wouldn't it spike down if they're not going to raise rates? Wouldn't that be a downward pressure? It certainly is not clear, is it? It's just not clear. Would you like a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks? I have that list, and I'm getting a lot of requests for it. So, you know, I will be happy to send it to anybody who asks for it. Or a list of commodity ETFs that allow investors to gain exposure to various areas of the commodity industry. And by the way, both these are available at InvestTalk Insiders free. Now, I'll send it to you if you send me an email, but you can go look at all my lists and listen to all the previous podcasts for free. All you do is sign up. Is go to investtalk.com, and again, it's all free. 888-99-SHORT, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? We'll talk about anything you want. The real 401k ripoff that insurance companies don't want their clients to know about. Now, almost half the 401ks out there have what is called a stable value fund available to you. Those are produced by insurance companies, by the way. Stable value fund. And it looks pretty good because, you know, it's stable and it gives you a decent return, especially in this environment. And this is the problem. Let me tell you what the problem is. We're talking about, actually it's 37% of all 401k plans have these. About $721 billion. Okay? Their return is similar to an intermediate bond fund. And the liquidity and stability of the money market funds, kind of a combo situation here. But the problem, there's no transparency. They don't have to report what's in them. You don't know what's in them. Another problem, they charge a fee, and the fee's pretty low. Okay, it's like 1% or so or less. Okay, that's pretty low. But, and the return is like 2 to 3%. But did you know that they don't have to report not only what's in them, they also don't have to report the money they make on the spread. The spread is they buy short-term bonds or short-term instruments. They buy them and they sell them. And the difference between the buy and the sell, they get to make that spread. And then they put it in the portfolio for the yields. That spread, the estimated profit from that spread, because they don't have to report it yet, is about 2%. They're making a fortune off of these things. Now, this is going to change probably because there is a new transparency laws coming in, and there's a new law concerning who is a fiduciary and what they have to do as a fiduciary, and that the standard is going to be steep, and this is going to be for all 401ks, and this is a concern for everybody, every plan sponsor. For instance, if I'm a money manager helping people with the 401k, it's my job to find the best, cheapest, most suitable funds to put in there. I have to find, and I have to have a methodology and prove that they are, instead of just saying, here's a fund. This is a good fund. No, I can't do that anymore. And the plan sponsor, that means your employer, has to watch us or anybody that if he doesn't hire somebody like us to do those kinds of jobs, he has to do it. The employer has to do it. In other words, you have to keep track and report on and be ongoing that you're offering the best that is available for your client, for your employees. And that's called, it's a new fiduciary law that's coming out. Very, very scary for employers. I think it is. I mean, it could result in a lot more lawsuits. There's already been a few lawsuits. It could produce more. Join the conversation. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. You're listening to InvestTalk. That's 888-992-4278. We have lots to get to this next, the rest of the show, so don't go away. 888-99-CHART.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary. Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next InvestTalk, investors tend to get emotional when they see the highs and lows of the market, selling on impulse rather than strategy, and thinking that they can time the market. When to walk away from an investment. That's our talking point for Thursday, May 21st, and we hope you'll be joining us then.
Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Mike called from Danville.
Question about my 403B. I'm in the process of revamping it right now. Get the opinion of the experts first. I have about 10 different mutual funds that I picked from large, mid, small, and foreign. And then within each of those, I have like growth and value and blend and kind of a mixture. But I had two questions. One, 10 funds too many? And two, do I need to have any bond exposure since I'm 35?
The answer to the second question is no. When you're that young, 35, you really don't need any bond exposure. I don't like buying bond mutual funds or bond ETFs, except in very specific cases. Is 10 too many? It's hard to know that. I would like to look at the holdings and see which funds there are. There's probably a lot of overlap. Overlap meaning if you have two funds and they're both large cap funds, there's probably the same stocks in each of them. So it could be too many, but not necessarily. Or, you know, I'd have to look at the funds. My gut feeling is it in a 401k where there's usually not a lot of choices, there's probably a lot of overlap. So I'd have to look at it. But your concern would be, am I too much exposed in any one part of the market? And that's what tell us the types of funds and the holdings that they have in them. Okay, if you were worried about the market, and that's why you're asking about bond funds, you're concerned, I would just probably take some profits from some of the funds that have done well. And at this point, I might put them in funds called the Stable Value Fund, if you have one, even though it's a ripoff by insurance company, it's still your best bet, a good place for a fairly safe return. And wait for a market correction. I wouldn't go crazy. You want to stay in with the market, but maybe producing a little bit of cash by selling off some of the higher price assets that done well and just, you know, reallocate a little bit might be a good idea. Just a suggestion. Thanks, Mike. Mike, I appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay. China solar stock implosion, a reminder to look under the ETF hood to see what's in it. For instance, there is a Guggenheim Solar ETF, TAN is the symbol, TAN. Well, there was a big solar implosion from a Chinese solar energy company called Hangenergy, H-A-N-E-R-G-Y. And that company went down 50% on today. 50%. Okay. Well, the problem is that company skyrocketed, skyrocketed earlier. The year to date went up 40% before today. And 150% if you're talking further in the last 12 months or so. And therefore it became a very big part of this ETF. And there's another Chinese solar company inside that ETF that got crushed. And since it was a big part of this fund, the ETF got crushed. So your diversification wasn't that good in the fund. And you have to look at not just the diversification, but the quality of stocks in there too. You can't just buy the ETF so I'm in solar energy. Oh, good. You have to kind of look to see, you got to go deeper than that. You have to see what they're holding and is it worth the price that they are? What if it's a huge PE and there's hardly any growth? What if there's suspicion that the numbers are wrong? And that's what it was, or it's been suspicion, that the numbers are wrong. And you're holding on to it and you have a huge exposure to that particular stock or two stocks or three stocks. And you're fat, dumb, and happy holding on to the ETF. You got to look deeper, especially into those little sliver sector ETFs. You don't have to worry about, you know, S&P 500 or a broader index ETF. You really don't have to worry about that. But when they start and these ETFs are getting more small slivers of the market, those small slivers, you have to look deeper. Saeed in Houston. How you doing, Saeed?
Hey, Steve. I just started listening about feedback. I downloaded the app on iHeartRadio, and there actually I found it. And I started listening last week, and I got very impressive because you are very direct, and you take direct calls, and you explain the market very quick instead of, you know, other people go and try to sell these things. You know, like, hey, come to me, and I will be the savior, like, you know, stuff like that. So,
your connection is really sorry, your connection is really bad. Do you have the radio on in the back?
No, actually, I'm calling from internet phone. I'm sorry, I'm outside.
That's better. Yeah, it's in and out.
Yeah, but very quick, before I ask you about UUP, dollar supposed to go down today because they are not raising interest rates.
Yeah.
So gangsters, I call them gangsters. They are the biggest criminals. They are Ponzi schemers. Federal Reserve, you know, they're supposed to be Fed and give treasuries, issue the bond backed by gold, by silver, by oil. That's how it's supposed to go. Federal Reserve is a crime. It has to be ended. But anyhow, I'm maybe other than Ron Paul, I'm one stupid guy talking about it. They manipulated the market. They manipulated the dollar. And right now, nobody. It's not a real market.
That's all true. I agree that the Fed has been manipulating, and they have really pushed everything around. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. This is InvestTalk. I'm sorry I have to go. And I apologize, Saeed, but we are running up against a hard break at the bottom of the half hour, so I had to leave. You asked about UUP in there. UUP is an exchange-traded fund, ETF, corresponding to the Deutsche Bank Long U.S. Dollar Index, futures index. So it really kind of tracks the dollar is what it does. The dollar gets stronger, weaker, and of course it got stronger all last year up until about, it was right in March, about mid-March. And ever since then, it started to get weaker. What he was saying is that the dollar got stronger all that time because the Fed stopped doing QE. His point was that the Fed has been manipulating our money, and that is true. That's what they do. They manipulate it to, quote-unquote, stabilize our economy, keep full employment, whatever else you want to say. That's what their job description is, the Federal Reserve. And what was interesting is the last 2 days, yesterday the dollar spiked up. UUP spiked up, and today it was up a little bit more. And today they released the minutes, and they said they weren't going to raise the rates basically in June. So kind of everybody already knew that. That was kind of already built in that they weren't. And therefore, this could be a situation of buy the rumor, sell the news, because the dollar was already falling. And then yesterday, the rumor was, well, maybe they're going to not raise rates. And so now we know they're not going to raise rates, so it spiked a little bit. But there really is no reason for it to spike. There really isn't. It should be weaker because the Fed is not going to raise rates. That means that they're worried about something, maybe our economy, and that should weaken our economy, our dollar, compared to other currencies. This is why I've said it before. Currency trading, the currency market is very, very difficult. There's a lot of things that can move it. And governments are not opposed, and it's not illegal for them to try to move it. Japan, for years and years and years, tried to keep its yen weak because they're a big exporter. What do you think China's doing? And what do you think they're doing? China and India, China, Japan, Europe, what do you think they're doing now? Their equivalent of Federal Reserve boards are trying to make their currency weak so they can export their way to health. So don't think the U.S. is not the only one manipulating. Everybody is. That's one of the reasons that makes it so difficult to trade currencies, because governments can influence. Anyways, good, interesting question. Good point. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, 888-99-CHART. There's been a survey done between studying the relationship between spending and income. And bottom line is, there's not a very good link. The more income you make doesn't necessarily equal the more you spend. As a matter of fact, it said for every 1% rise in your income only relates to about a 1/10 of 1% rise in consumption. There's not much link. And it also found that incomes could vary greatly, up to 30% up and down. In 2013 to 2014, income could vary greatly. And not just for the poor either. Interesting. So if that is true, then consumer spending, remember, consumer spending is a big driver of our economy, huge driver of our economy. It's hard, you know, remember we've seen that the jobs have increased dramatically in the last year. And for the whole, for 6 months now, 5+ months this year, retail sales have not gone up. It's been pretty flat. Well, why? We had a good big jobs report just last month. Why come we're not having good retail sales? Well, because there's not a link between necessarily how much money you make and how much you spend. The link is very weak, the conclusion was. The link between spending and income is very weak. So what causes spending and non-spending? What is the link? And they didn't really have an answer for that, but that's what I want to know. Maybe it's more a fear about what's going on in the world, in the economy. Maybe, you know, politics, if there's a lot of bickering about politics around election time, maybe that, I don't know. I want to know what the link is. But, of course, they didn't give us the answer. A lot of these times, these surveys produce, at least for me, produce more questions than they answer. They produce questions. So, your questions come first. Whether you have a stock or strategy or a money question, we're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
This is Lauren from Delaware. I have a question regarding NXP Semiconductors, ticker symbol NXPI. It looks like an interesting stock. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. Thank you.
Okay, NXPI is NXP Semiconductor. It is a $24 billion company out of the Netherlands. So it's a European stock. Netherlands-based provider of mixed signal, analog, power management, RF, radio frequency, and digital processing semiconductors. It's been growing very nicely, 18%, 20% in the last 4 or 5 quarters, quarter over quarter over quarter. And that was an increase from a year ago of 9 to 12% quarter over quarter over quarter. So earnings are going to be up 22% this year and 13% next year. And surprisingly, the stock is overpriced, but not that overpriced. I mean, it's only like a 20 PE, and if it's going to make $6.59 next year, it's a $102 stock. So that PE is going to be driven down if the stock doesn't move up. Huge return on equity. It is an interesting stock. The numbers I see here are intriguing. Mutual funds are buyers of the company. I'm not, you know, I can't do an in-depth research on it. They don't pay any dividend. Doesn't surprise me. But it looks like an interesting play. I kind of like what the numbers I see. I'd have to do more homework on it and see what their profit margins are. Are they expanding or shrinking? Where are their sales coming from? See the price to sales ratio, they're doing about $1.4 billion a quarter. And it's $24 billion stock. So that's, about $5.6 billion at $24 billion. So it is, you know, like a little less than 5-to-1 ratio. That's a little high, but not terribly high. I'm just trying to do math in my head, and I'm getting old, and my math is slower. Sorry about that, guy. NXPI, kind of like it. Now, do you buy it here? It's been moving sideways, for 2 months. I wouldn't be surprised. It's like finding support. I put on half position at least. See if it breaks out. The high it has to break out above is about $104. It's $102.88 today. Breaks above that, then there's no resistance on the upside, and you want to buy some more. If it breaks down, you would like to. I'd like to see it fill the gap, which would be about $85 a share. It's about 15-16% from here. That would be filling a gap, and that'd be also a buy point. Interesting play. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. NXPI, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And, you know, where we were talking about retail sales or consumer spending, and there's no link of the income. Well, here was something I was going to talk about yesterday was, you know, we have lower gas prices, more jobs. Spring is around the corner. Merchants are still waiting for customers to show up. Where have the shoppers gone? Where are they? And this article gave three possible explanations, which was better than that survey that we just talked about. They gave none. One, wages are low because there's a lot of part-time workers. And even though there is very low inflation, wages are pretty low. Good-paying jobs are hard to get. Good-paying jobs tend to be temporary in this economy. And there's a lot of part-time, as I said, a lot versus full-time employees. The jobless rate may be not as low as it looks. And that's one of my personal conclusions. It's not as strong a job market as we think. And as I said, I think the Fed also thinks that. Or else why wouldn't they raise the rates? A 5-point-something unemployment rate is full employment. Historically, that's full employment. Why aren't you raising the rates? Why is the rates way subpar normal? The Fed must be worried about something. Also, they said maybe there's pessimism about the country's future, lost respect in global affairs maybe, constant bickering in Washington. Those were some of the other peripheral reasons they thought. That may be why the consumers are not spending. Maybe there has been a change. See, this is also possible. Maybe consumers have decided it's time to hunker down and not spend so much of your money. Remember, there's all those baby boomers reaching retirement age now. Time for InvestTalk 101, junk bonds. A desperate move in the low interest world. There's going to be a very interesting statistics I'm going to tell you about. One of the most popular assets today are junk bonds, by the way. These are companies rated below BBB by S&P, Standard & Poor's. BBB or lower is junk bonds. Historically, 42% of all corporate junk bonds ever issued defaulted. 40, let me get that number again. 42% of all corporate junk bonds ever issued defaulted. Means they didn't pay your money back. However, investors are clearly overlooking this, and they're accepting far lower yields than historical norms. You wait for the next recession. Junk bonds default all over the place. And many new junk bond issues are going to the market with very weak, non-existent covenants that typically protect bondholders from companies further leveraging their balance sheets. In other words, they used to issue junk bonds saying, okay, here's a bunch of junk bonds out there, but we promise never to issue more junk bonds because we don't want to get in too much financial, too deep of a financial hole. They used to issue those junk bonds with that covenant that they wouldn't do that. Now they don't. They're going to issue more if they want to. It's a very bad situation. Very bad. Okay? Just so you know. And be careful of, you know, exchange-traded fund and bond funds holding on to junk. It's like we talked about earlier about the TAN ETF and solar energy, and then the underlying company has huge problems, and you don't know what's inside there and how much problems they're going to have. So you got to be aware with what's under the hood, even in junk bonds funds. Be very, very careful. Now, just be careful. Do you have questions about junk bonds? Give me a call. Or send me a note. Go to InvestTalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. And by the way, we at KPP Financial never invest in junk bonds. In our income portfolio, where 50% are bonds, all high quality bonds. Big blue chip stocks. That's InvestTalk 101. If you have questions on this topic or any other, give me a call. 888-99-CHART is the number. 888-992-4278.
There's another way to get into the conversation on InvestTalk. Send us a question or comment via Twitter at KPP Financial.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Bobby calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Stock symbol I'm calling about is Abraxas Petroleum. The symbol is A as in Apple, X, A as in Apple, S as in Sam. I do not own it. I would like your opinion and can probably make a move. Thank you and look forward to listening to the answer on the next show. Bye.
Okay, AXAS. Okay, Abraxas Petroleum Corporation. It is a $310 million company. Immediately, in your mind, whenever you, if I ever talk about a company that is a market cap of under $1 billion, it's a micro cap, high risk. That should be the first thing in your mind. High risk, warning lights, okay? It's engaged in exploration production of oil and gas, primarily in the United States and Canada. This is the problem. They're going to lose 3 cents this year, a share. They made 62 cents last year, and then they're going to make 17 cents next year. Sales have gone from a growth quarter over quarter of 30 to 50 to 60% per quarter. Now, this most recent quarter, down 27% sales. Sales are only $18 million. Very small. Now, if you look at it and say, well, the PE is only 5, well, that's based on last year's PE. This year's sales, there's not going to be a PE because there's no E. Next year is going to be a 17 cents PE. And if you give it, because it's not growing, if you give it a market PE of 15, what is it worth, $2, $2.50? And it's $2.92 now. So it's probably fairly valued. Probably. Now, if you're going to take a big gamble, you could take a gamble on oil prices rising. But I would find out it says exploration production of oil and gas. Where? Well, it says in the United States and Canada. Where? Is it a shale oil area? Where? I'd find out a little bit more about what their business is. We're coming up next. We're coming up on the last segment of the program. So let's try to get your question in. You can call up right now. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk about downsizing in retirement.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And you should know about our next live webinar. This is a one-hour session about global investing. Steve and Justin see this as a solution to an overpriced domestic market if you do it right. Join them for the discussion June 4th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. There'll be plenty of time, too, for your questions. It's free, but you do need to sign up. You can do that now on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Brandon in Mill Valley. He wants to talk about Apache. How you doing, Brandon?
Hi. How you doing today?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Well, I see Apache keeps drifting down, and the oils, even when the oils are going up, they lost the CEO about a week ago, but mm-hmm. I just wondered what you were thinking.
Yeah, Apache Corporation is engaged in exploration and production of crude oil and natural gas globally. It's a $23 billion company. They're going to lose money this year, $1.13 a share, after making almost $6 a share last year. The year before, they made $8 a share. The year before that, $9 a share. The year before that, $12 a share. So down, down, down. Next year, they're going to recover, Brandon, to $1.07 a share. But it's a $61 stock. So what's a stock really worth? You know, it's not. It's the sales are shrinking and have been for 2 years. I would be very, very careful with this stock. It looks like it's put in a bottom, and I don't think it's going to go under. But the only way this thing is going to survive is oil prices keep going up. And I think oil prices are going to go up, but it's going to be a slow process. Not a fast, and I can see oils coming back down. You know, I can see them coming down, retrace a little bit of what their recent gains. So, I would be very careful of this, Brandon. It's a good sized company. It's not going to go under. It's a good company, but it's very weak in its sales and just going to start to recover next year in its earnings. So it wouldn't be something I'd be interested in. It would not be.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Steve. Thanks. I always appreciate your opinion and value your judgment.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Brandon. That's APA, Apache Corporation. I am sure they're going to be around. The numbers, I understand weakness, and I understand possible opportunities because these stocks have been beat up. But this has been beat up a little bit longer than others, and not comfortable. Downsizing in retirement. We all probably have thought about it, figured out we have to do it. But it should be all a part of everybody's retirement plan. If you're going to stop working for a living, you have to consider downsizing depending on how much money you have and how much income you have, cash flow, and all those other things. And, of course, downsizing generally means the biggest thing that you own and that's your house. Should you sell it and go to something smaller? When you do that, you have to consider savings based on maintenance, utilities, property taxes. And if you have a mortgage, do you want to get rid of the mortgage? But those are things you consider on the financial side of downsizing. One of the other things you might need to think about, and I have personal experience with this, can you maintain the property as you age? Can you climb stairs? My father-in-law lives in an apartment that has upstairs, and he never goes up there. He's 88 years old. He can't go up there anymore. He can, but it's a lot of work. He really doesn't want to. So, yeah, also, you have to start thinking about, since the home is a lot of people's assets are tied, the cash, there's a big load of cash tied in that house. So it's a way to sell that bigger house. It's a way to monetize that asset. And you know what? It's not. I can see more and more and more people, senior citizens, not wanting to own something. They can rent if they want to because they can move to someplace else. You know, I mean, we have this mentality, we have to own. Well, you don't necessarily. It depends on, you know, where you want to live and the cost of living and where you want to live. You know, depends on what you have. You know, and this really is a personal situation, a personal decision. How much money you have, how much income coming in from Social Security, pensions, whatever, how much money you have and how much the assets you have that can produce how much cash, rental properties, everything is very individual. So you have to look at your own case, your own personal situation. And we can do it for you. We can help you anyways. We have a software called Riskalyze that we take, and you can take the risk test and then send us your portfolio. And we can run a retirement map based on how much money you have and how much you're going to need, and how much longer you're going to save, all those kinds of things. Something that might help you. Go to investtalk.com and take the Riskalyze thing, questionnaire. Before we close for the hour, take advantage of an opportunity to see a broader range of options for you and your investor dollars in a very kind of overvalued market. I don't know if I want to say very overmarket. So get a first-hand look at the possibilities. Join us on June 4th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time for our free live webinar. Find out more, sign up on investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial. Thank you for listening, and we hope you join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.